Chapter 2. Cutter. 6 months later. You've got to be a fool to decide to get married at all. But only a real pair of idiots would plan to get hitched outside in April in Maine. The chances that this afternoon would be cold, soggy, and miserable were close to 100%. 100%. Yet somehow, Bridget and Shep managed to score a sunny 65-degree day with just enough of a light breeze to send Bridget's brown curls drifting into her face as Shep moves in to kiss his bride. He reaches up, tucking her hair behind her ear with a sappy grin, before pressing his lips to hers with tenderness that sets every pair of ovaries in the garden to exploding with juicy popping sounds you can just make out over the string quartet's cover of Otis Redding's That's How Strong My Love Is. Even some of the men are tearing up. I cut my eyes Colin's way to find him discreetly swiping at his eyes before leaning over to kiss the top of his girlfriend Kirby's head. She looks up at him, cupping his cheek in her hand and mouthing, "I love you so much," before they start making out like they need the oxygen from each other's mouths to live. Gag. They're even grosser than Shep and Bridget, but at least they've had the sense not to get hitched. Yet. For all their big talk about not needing legal paperwork to make their love official, I have a feeling I'll be sitting through another one of these exercises in stupidity before too long. They're going to start trying for a kid after the European leg of our tour wraps up in August, and there's nothing like a baby to make previously sane people decide getting the law involved in their love life is a good idea. But the safety of marriage is limited at best and a bald-ass lie at worst. For 50% of marriages, all that legal document will do is make it harder to leave a crappy situation when they decide they want out. And there is always a way out. So why bother making a forever promise in the first place? It truly baffles me, but Shep and Bridget are so blissed out that I can't help being happy for them, especially after the gossip I caught floating around the rehearsal dinner last night. Megan is getting a divorce from that scumbag mob lawyer she married. Megan is getting a divorce, and suddenly dreams I thought were dead and buried are back on the operating table, ready to be jolted back to life. The only woman I've ever loved will be single again soon, and I'm not going to botch my second chance with her. I'll show her that I can be everything she wants, everything she needs, even if it means eating a hot, sloppy serving of humble pie and kissing up to one of my least favorite people, Theodora Devi. What a royal pain in the ass she is. But she's my best bet, the only girl who can help me solve my bad reputation problem with the risk of collateral damage. As Theo flies down the aisle behind Shep and Bridget, looking undeniably hot in her hideous yellow bridesmaid's dress, I force a smile. How is she pulling off that color, let alone all the ruffles on that skirt? It's the chest, I decide. Those ridiculously high, round, gorgeous hood ornaments transform the frumpy into the fabulous. They're the perfect shape, the perfect weight, the perfect overflowing handful. And I would remember them fondly if they weren't attached to a woman who thinks I'm the human equivalent of phlegm smeared on the bottom of her shoe. As if to prove me correct, Theo meets my gaze with a curl of her lip and quickly looks away, telling me things haven't changed at all between us in the 6 months I've been on tour. But that's okay. It's perfect, in fact. Theo hating me is part of the plan. I don't want to risk hurting some innocent woman's feelings, but Theo doesn't have feelings, and she isn't nearly as innocent as she looks. That woman is a stone-cold shark out for number one. But that will also work out nicely for me. I have something the shark wants. Now all I have to do is chum the water and enjoy the feeding frenzy that follows.